Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. We are trying desperately to record here. We're on attempt number 3, and I'm with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
You know, you're never supposed to let him see his sweat, Brian.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes making this show is hard, man, but we're trying. You're fresh back from Blockchain Week and Magical Crypto Con. How was it?
It was everything in your wildest dreams. No, it was really good, honestly.
I heard to meet a lot of people. Yeah, I heard many positive reviews of that of the MCC conference.
It was really better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't know. Nobody did, because it was the first time they're putting this thing on. And it was great. It was like crypto Twitter IRL. You can walk up to anybody, talk to them about anything, you know, regardless of follower count. You know, there was no there was no entourages, there was no nothing. It was really good. The venue was great, the food was great, they had food trucks, and I don't know, everything about it was just really cool. It was just really like it was a niche group of people, but it was everybody who you'd want to be there talking about Bitcoin and crypto. It wasn't necessarily like trading oriented. They're talking about like moving the dates around next year and maybe including like a trading track of speakers to talk about like derivatives and stuff like that, which I think would be really cool. Certainly things I'd be more interested in.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was great. It was great.
Well, it's put on by some reputable folks. Whalepanda, Samson from Blockchain. Yeah.
Blockstream.
Sorry. Thank you. Charlie Lee and the non-present, at least in the physical person, Fluffy Pony.
I still don't know why he wasn't there. Nobody said. I suspect it's some visa or whatever thing. I don't know.
Yeah, he's from South Africa. Maybe it's because he's the project lead of a privacy coin. Maybe we could put some FUD out there.
I mean, he was
wanted there by the law.
He was there last year though, so I didn't get why.
Yeah.
Why he wasn't there? I don't know.
I don't know. Visa issues are tricky, so we'll leave it at that. But it looked like fun. I'm sad that I missed out on it. I had intended to go to, I hate saying Blockchain Week, but I'd rather say that than Consensus, I guess. But, you know, with Mother's Day and then I had some birthdays to attend to, all that kind of stuff, I didn't go, but it looked like a good time. So I hope I can make it to a magical CryptoCon at least on some other occasion. A lot happened while you were gone.
I highly recommend going to Blockchain Week for anybody looking to network or get a job in crypto or explore the possibilities in crypto. That's not how I got my jobs in crypto, but it's certainly one avenue that you can, you know, proceed down should that interest you. Some people are more networking oriented. I'm definitely not, but you know, it's always good. The power to the people, as they say.
Nice.
Yes, a lot happened when I was gone.
Were people hyped about all the price action that was happening, or was it pretty muted, or what was the vibe in terms of all the run-up that was going on?
Well, I've been to conferences both when price was going up and when price was going down. I much prefer the bear conferences because people aren't necessarily focused on price as much.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly wasn't the case here. I don't think anybody was like euphoric or anything. I don't know. When did we do our DC podcast? That was
last July or so of 2018.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, because I was at a conference when we were breaching 10K for the first time, and that was just like bonkers. But obviously, I'm a trader. I want to be trading when this stuff's happening. So that was disappointing to see all that stuff. We didn't, last episode, we talked about 6,400. Nobody was more wrong than me. Nobody. Nobody in the world about 6,400.
I don't think Tone Vase has gotten his 1,500 yet.
Okay, well, you know, that's a different story. But, you know, TA was out the window for this entire move.
TA was out the window. It's like that 6,400 range didn't exist. I mean, we just went through it like butter, didn't we?
It was no stops, no chaser, no holds bar. It was like, you know, 12 months of ranging down on that level didn't affect the price at all. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
That's good though, because, you know, that was the whole fear, was that we're going to range at below that level. You know, we would tap 64, break below 4 or whatever, and then bounce around up to 64.
Yeah. But, we'll have to
I'm
see.
Glad,
I mean,
you know,
we did get a weekly close above it. If we get another weekly close above 6,400, then maybe we'll still range, but we basically stair-stepped up where we'll range, which would be really interesting for the market. We'll talk about that. But yeah, I was actually you know, I was looking for the opportunity, especially because we had all this sentiment that led us towards being able to go above 6,400 with a lot of shorts and, you know, just most obvious trade of shorting 6,400 and all that kind of stuff. Like there was a lot of reasons in my mind why we could breach through it, but I expected it to be like a quick short squeeze up and back down, like within a single weekly candle type of thing, and certainly not to 8,400, which is where it topped out. And more than that, like we lingered up at the 8K range. So everything beyond 7K totally blew my mind, even if I felt like there was a decent chance of getting through 6,400 on a temporary basis. Now my question is, are we going to range above 6,400, or was this just a big nasty fake out and we'll all feel like morons if we didn't sell everything, you know, above 7K? As we're talking, we're right around 7K because we had a, you know, whatever it was, 15% top to bottom, but now about 10% down daily from 8K to 7K. And, you know, we got to see what's going to come next. But yeah, it's just like a total whirlwind of a week from a price action perspective. Volatility is certainly back. And I wonder, do you think the volatility is here to stay, or do you think it'll have to calm down?
Well, I think everything was doing great until the market was shook from this Bitstamp thing, which we'll talk about. But I think volatility will be here to stay in general for a little while anyway. You know, we saw this massive upswell in media, mainstream media, as soon as we broke like 4 or 5, and then it just keeps going. There's just every day there's a headline. Even this Bitstamp thing, the Binance hack, it's just every single day it's in people's faces. Like 40 million hacked, 200 million sold on Bitstamp, whatever it is. I don't remember. Maybe it's 40 million, 50 million, whatever it is. It's in the millions. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it was 3,200 Bitcoin or so. So probably like 25 to 30 million, something like that.
And those are just super flashy headlines for everybody, regardless, you know. So that is a good thing. I don't think how it happens is a good thing, but obviously we needed to pull back significantly.
So everybody listening to this knows we blew through 6,400, but we can talk. Yeah, let's dig into the drop from above 8K, I guess we can say. It really wasn't at 82 to 8,400 for a super long time, but it did range up there a good bit, put in a daily bear div and the whole nine. We got quite parabolic and eventually, I mean, we broke that parabola eventually, but it wasn't rapid until it had already descended some. So it was an interesting route of doing what it did. I just wouldn't have ever expected to be on top of 8K for that long, I guess. But there we were. And when it did break, it broke in a big way. And there's a lot of speculation about why, like how it happened. So there's two exchanges right now, is that right, that are behind the BitMEX like mark price, meaning where BitMEX's funding and stuff comes from, because BitMEX's own XBT is traded independently, but I guess Bitstamp and Coinbase, are those the two that it's based on with that mark price?
Yeah, so it was, Kraken was in there at one point, but as of yesterday, it's just Bitstamp and Coinbase. So and very manipulatable. You know?
Yeah, because the difference between the mark price and the actual BitMEX derivative price is something that's closely tracked. So if one of the underlying exchanges for the mark price changes drastically, the likelihood that that adjusts the way people are trading on XBT is significant. So someone threw up this gigantic sell wall basically under market from every other exchange. Like it wasn't subtle, it was purposeful. And you say it was a lot of money because it was whatever, 25 million bucks. And I actually think relative to the overall market cap that it is able to influence, it's not a ton of money because a 10% move is worth 12 billion, you know?
Right. I mean, it was how it was done and when it was done and why it was able to be done in that fashion, specifically on Bitstamp. All of those factors came together to get the move that we got. And even the so Bitstamp is even in the CME index. It's one of maybe 4 or 5 exchanges, but even they dropped down to 6,300. So there's going to be implications for that. You know, they're going to investigate that. They're going to investigate any stamp-related index is going to be investigated by people. Stamp is a bit licensed now, So they're probably going to get a phone call from them.
And that's mostly, it's not so much that Bitstamp did something wrong, but it's like doing forensics and stuff on who the participants were and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can argue like the measures Bitstamp had in place for that move were inadequate to allow for purposeful market interruption or... I hesitate to use the word manipulation, but I mean, if you have that much coin, you can just go to OTC and get a much better price.
Yeah.
So you're clearly moving the price down.
For a reason. Someone wanted to move the price down. And the reasoning is, and this is, I wrote this up in a Telegram group I'm in where someone was asking me about it. So my argument, the primary, after I described like the underlying exchanges and stuff, I said to these people that BitMEX's own derivative, it's by far the most liquid, highest leverage, obviously, and heavily traded product in the space. And it's actually, Arthur Hayes said that the average leverage in April was 22x, which is crazy. But it makes it ripe to be squeezed and to overcompensate moves as it responds to market changes. So the move on Bitstamp allows someone to spend relatively a small amount of money, say 25 million, and then that overcompensate the dump on BitMEX by triggering, you know, mass liquidations and stop losses and everything else. But because it's so large and liquid, they can get filled on BitMEX if they're also on BitMEX well below the price they're selling at and with leverage, and they're forcing the price down into their bids from the lower liquidity exchange that's easier to control, which is still a risky gambit because you don't know, like, it could overcompensate where your bids are and, like, you know, it could go well beyond where your own bids are, who knows what. But yeah, I mean, in addition to the person that's doing that, like, they can fill a larger amount of money than they even had on Bitstamp. So they're not just reducing their price, they're like really exaggerating their ability to get filled. And they just have a pretty good chance of success if they don't get caught or stuck, or if it's unregulated enough to get away with it, whatever. I'm super fascinated by all that. Do you think that's a relatively decent theory of what someone would have been doing and thinking?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Just because of the ease at which that was able to be done. I mean, it's like the Binance hack. It's not just about the hack. It's about what you can do to the market when the market responds to that information, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you were saying with Binance, the people did the thing on Binance, but they may have been trading those same coins that they were affecting on other exchanges.
Right. So you set higher asks elsewhere. You short the coin you hacked when the news comes out. I mean, all this stuff, just like you said, you know, you could short it before the move happens, cause you know, you're going to move the price 10% or whatever this move was. And then you can have your bids low so that, you know, again, because you know you're going to move the price. And you do all this on leverage on BitMEX. And it's hard to connect two and two together, you know, who's actually doing what here.
Yeah, especially so, if someone's planning this and is careful.
Yeah, so it's virtually impossible to catch the person, you know. So, yeah.
All markets are manipulated to some degree, but like this to me seems pretty brazen. It's not exactly going to help the Bitcoin case for inclusion with an ETF, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely not. The indices that are used on these exchanges could easily be more robust to deal with anomalies or outliers. But the bigger problem is moving the entire market. You know, when that happens, it's much harder to control for blatant manipulation on one exchange like this. So,
yeah. Nevertheless, even though it was, you know, manipulation and all that, I found the levels hilarious because on Bitstamp, you know, it was just like a tiny fraction of a percent or something away from the daily Keijin where it finally stopped. On BitMEX, it just drilled the exact breakdown level from November of 2018, like right at 6,400 is where the wick went to. So like the levels are perfectly rational in my mind, even if it was totally fabricated. Like it's funny to me how the price still ends up doing the type of thing that you would expect it might do, even though it was obviously absurd to have done it in such a small amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's always good to just have a system use levels regardless of how absurd they look. I mean, I tweeted out maybe a couple days ago at this point, like 7K is the likely target based on the 4-hour cloud for a pullback. And here we are. So, you know, it looked ridiculous because it was $1,200 above that at that point. But even before the drop, though, I was looking at, I'm not a Wyckoff expert by any means, but on the hourly, it was looking, it was getting some Y Coffee-ian vibes of distribution as far as technically what could have happened there. It was either that or some sort of bull pattern, bull pennant or flag, where it's just like ranging in a tight range. But
have to say, I was so thrown off guard by the move, like really above 7,200. We flew up to 7,500, came back down, and then we formed this little pennant around 7K, 7,200, something like that. And everything above that kind of shocked me. Like, I thought maybe we'd get a little bear div from there or something like that. We just didn't get it. And then, yeah, above 8K, it felt so much like distribution. And the other thing I put on my chart at that time was the July 2018 top. The weekly close is basically where we stalled out and couldn't get past. So it was funny. It was just such a rational place where we stopped. It was just the speed that we got there and then came back down that just blew my mind.
And looking at the ETH pair, so the daily RSI on ETH hasn't been that high since the all-time high.
Yeah.
So that also gave me caution. Yep. Additionally, DentaCoin was up 55%, which gave me caution. So I was out of everything sans cold storage around 80 to 82. I was like, all right, you know, it can go to 10K without me. But what I'm seeing right now doesn't look good. I wasn't short, but I was just in cash. I was flat or however you want to say that. So again, like I wasn't expecting to go to 8K, but I didn't expect it to just not pull back at all. But even on like the 12th and the 13th, we had an Adam E to project that move up from there. So
yeah, I mean,
I wasn't paying attention to chart at that time, looking at Sagan.
Yeah, it's funny how some things do become clear in hindsight. And you know, we had looked at like Ethereum, for example, the 3-day cloud thing, but I don't think either of us would have assumed it'd be that fast. Like, I thought the move to 200 made sense. The move to 260 just baffled me, like more than I could have possibly waited or possibly have anticipated. One of the biggest lessons I've had in this whole bear market, I guess, and then the response from it is just the importance of patience and waiting until it feels just like excruciating to make a move, both on the way down, on the way up, really everything. Like trying to take it as slow as possible, wait for it to do the absurd, and then, you know, respond once it makes the adjustments, I guess. That's a hard lesson to learn. It's one I just continue to have to teach myself because I'm so tempted to act while it's in the move rather than wait for it to, like, do something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I had an ETH long on Kraken from 150. I had spot buys from 180. And I let those go around, like, 240 to 250. And then we go to, like, 280. So,
yeah,
And I let my most of my Bitcoin go around 6K and didn't let enough of it run. I certainly had some left on spot, but yeah. I mean, part of that was my excuse is I was traveling and I don't want to see price reversing $1,000 when I'm on a train or something, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. And these overnight things too are the same thing. I mean, Bitcoin's a tough market to trade. And yeah, I was in a similar boat. Like I let go of Ethereum longs before you, but holy cow, I look at them and I'm like, man, it was a nice win from 170 to 200, but it would have been gigantic if I'd waited. It's like, you know, and I even gave some back, like saying, you know, trying to say this is the top and I'm gonna short this baby. And, you know, obviously that doesn't work out very well. So yeah, the move above, I guess, 215 baffled me with Ethereum. Yeah, so just patience. Whoa.
We know for the most part that when Bitcoin gets a massive move, there's going to be some rotation into Bitcoin, just like there's some rotation out of alts when alts move, you know? So that was rational to me. The fact that the cloud or whatever system you use said to stay long the entire time.
It did.
If you go back on the daily, you know, people looking at all sorts of cloud levels now that everybody knows what an edge to edge is, but I like to base everything on the daily. And then if I need a target additionally beyond that, I just go to the 2-day. I rarely look at the 3-day. So, but if you're looking at the daily, the cloud said to go long and stay long. You know, it didn't say to do anything else. So from that respect, it is what it is, right? So you're expecting to make more money going long than going short when prices above cloud like that.
Yeah, And that's what I'm looking at now. Like, to me, even though I got Atomos stuff before we got to these levels in the first place, now that I'm looking at, you mentioned the 4 hour, that's what I'm watching as well, because I'm finding a little more success in the middle time frames, is that the 4 hour Kijin is right there. We're right on it. So to me, it was a tradable range. And until that range fails, then I'll look down for another step or get back, you know, look at things from a higher time frame. But to me, it said this was the dip to buy. So I'm actually in the market now. We'll see how that holds up. But, you know, to me, this was the place that was worth a risk in terms of getting back in, as dire as it looks on that daily candle. My gut says that we're going to set some kind of consolidation range here now on Bitcoin, at least. And I don't really know how it'll affect alts necessarily. But yeah, whether the wick was manipulated or not, we got a huge drawdown, you know, like, so.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is at this point. But and that run up past six four, I think the Binance news really helped that, honestly. Like, we didn't dump as far as I thought we would have on that Binance news. And again, it was just in everybody, it was in everybody's face, like, this is crypto. It certainly wasn't good news, but just no news is bad news, right? So there was that, there was the conference, there's institutional stuff, there's a lot of retail stuff, the trade war, capital flight from China, so I keep hearing about. Yep. The short squeeze we were talking about, the fact that futures was continually in backwardation the entire way up was another indicator. The fact that funding was negative the entire way up, so shorts were paying longs on BitMEX until recently. Those were all signs of that we had fuel in the tank, I guess.
Yeah, one of the amazing things to me, I'd love to learn more about the story, is on Bitfinex, about 12,000 BTC came off of shorts at a place where it wasn't squeezed. Like, it was already up there around 8,200 or something like that. And then all of a sudden, in like an hour or two, something like 12,000 Bitcoin came off of shorts, and it flipped to where longs were vastly outpacing shorts again after there were way more shorts than longs for a long time. And of course, that's when we dumped. Like, so whoever took that 12,000 BTC off, whether they had to or whether they just, you know, got mentally capitulated, that's when it finally dumped, is after those folks are not going to make their money. So it's like just a brutal market, you know?
Yeah, it was for that person. So I think a lot of Chinese miners actually use Bitfinex to hedge their positions. Mm-hmm. And miners are just permanently long crypto unless they're selling, right? So, mm-hmm. And then nobody has more crypto than miners for the most part, unless you're super early. And I think miner selling was a big part of why we broke 64 in October, November, whatever it was, November. So it's no surprise that, you know, somebody may have been hedged and now are closing that, but they closed it at the worst possible time.
Yeah.
They closed it at the very top before it broke down.
Yeah.
So that was definitely painful for them.
Yeah, I wonder what that justification was for, but, you know, people do things all the time for crazy reasons. So we don't know that story, and we probably won't. Maybe they just...
Well, it's weird. It's weird to, like, let it go all at once versus maybe they let it go a little bit, little by little on the way up and then just hit a level. But
yeah.
I don't know, you know. But yeah, it was... I doubt it was just a trader hedging or anything, or somebody short. It was most likely a miner, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I will say there was the bullish sentiment in the market was enormous at the time. It was like, you know, buy every dip. There's no the new paradigm stuff. And it's like, I mean, people were more and more saying we're going up to 9,600, which the lines I have on my chart, the November breakdown, the July top from 2018 and the April top from 2018 is 9,600. And that did look like the next level. If we were going to have another run, it was going to go all the way to 9,600, which would have been just staggering. I was already in disbelief. I would have been in like shock, like absolute shock if we went to 9,600. So my faith was restored in the market a little bit. But yeah, anyway, that's the crazy stuff that happens. And yeah, that 12,000 BTC coming off, though, that was the final story for me. All right, so I mean, that's where we are now, but let's talk about where we go from here. So do you think my 4 hour Kijin idea is crazy? Are you waiting to see it respond and try to create some kind of local bottom, or what are you looking at?
No, I agree. I mean, Any Kijun bounce is a good Kijun bounce for me in the bullish aspect. I think the market's a little shook after that Bitstamp stuff. There's probably going to be some news, negative news coming this week about consequences for Bitstamp. I don't know. I mean, the other reason that happened the way it happened is because their engine allows for that to happen. So instead of everything being over in like a minute or two, it took 10, 11 minutes to complete that sell order because the book, the way I read it is the book, the order book was so empty that a sell that size would have wiped the book completely. So there would have been a wick to zero, basically.
Yeah.
So their engine prevented that from happening. But instead we get this, which is 11 minutes of selling, whatever it was.
So it leaves the order on the book, but it basically puts a constraint in terms of how far down it will go towards zero, and it just leaves the market order there for absolutely any order that comes in to approach it.
Yeah, and that could be wrong, but I don't think it is, just the way it played out. The other possibility is that the seller was spamming sells, market sells all the way down, like every minute or whatever it was. But there was gaps in price, I believe, as well. I'm still trying to track down like the 30-second tick data for Bitstamp, but
yeah.
Okay, so where it goes from here? I like the hourly charts when we're trending or when we have volatility, which sounds crazy for me. But like I said last episode, my problem was not moving to a lower time frame quick enough. So you know, we saw that Adam and Eve on the hourly on May 12th, 13th. And right now we're painting a falling wedge with a pull dip on the hourly. So I like 75 as far as a bounce from here. 75 is also like 50% of the range.
Yeah, it's a cloud retrace as well, or a fib retrace.
So yeah, so it's 75 is like the high from the 11th or 12th as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I like that level in the near term.
Yeah, I like that level too. And honestly, if I see any day that's down like 10% plus, I'm just going to anticipate there's going to be either some degree of retrace or there's something really wrong. and in this market that's been so bullish, to me, it seems ripe for some form of retrace back up before we get further continuation, if that's to be what happens. So that's very much where I came from as well. I'm happy to be in the market right now, even though it's higher than where I got out mostly. That's okay. Like, that's the whole point of, you know, looking to find your setups. To me, this is a clean setup. So if all this fails, then I actually think that 6,400 may not be where it holds. If it didn't hold on the way up, maybe it won't hold on the way down, I guess is the way I look at it. Or maybe we'll just retrace these wicks, like 64 to 68, depending on the exchange. It's kind of what I would be looking at if this zone, like this 4-hour Kijun type of stuff, if the 1-hour wedge, if that starts to fail, that's what I'll be looking for. Let's talk about volatility. So volatility was up, 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 and then cooled down for a few days. Obviously today volatility went back up to really high levels. Like it's in the we're at the degree of volatility. There's a BitMEX volatility chart on TradingView. And we're at the type of levels that, you know, we reached at the height of the bull market and stuff. So do you think as volatility calms down, will that open up opportunities for altcoins? Or do you think waiting on alt season is still hopium, or you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm just looking at ETH right now. I think it'll continue to range. So previously it ranged from 250 to 170. I think it's going to range from 280 to 200 basically until it makes a decision. Anytime Bitcoin, like we said last episode, like all alts need is for Bitcoin to go sideways and anything can happen.
Yeah.
And that's basically how we got alts, people rotating into alts over the past week. You know, Bitcoin just stalled out at like 88 to 82, 83. And Ethereum went from 170 to 280 in like a day, you know, a couple days, completely parabolic.
Yeah. And when we talked about our 333 target, or really the cloud would even say upwards of like 375, that's a long-term thing because it was a three-day chart that the cloud currently extends out to July or whenever we talked about the target coming from. So even if it goes part way to that target, it could range back a huge retrace and still be the target. So
you know, for ETH, we could go below 180 and 300 or whatever. 333 is still the target. This may just like languish sideways until we get above the cloud on the 3 day. But you know, I don't have a lot of experience with like 3 day clouds, so I can't really speak to that. But for alts, it is generally better to use a lower time frame than the weekly, just because they move quicker. I mean, like I said, ETH moved in like 2 days, $100+. So you want to zoom in a little bit for that sort of edge case or non-edge case in the case of alts. But yeah, I think volatility is back for sure.
Yeah, I think we have to wait to see what kind of like daily pattern is made with Bitcoin. And those can take a couple of months to happen. And I think once a pattern becomes relatively clear a pattern is in play with Bitcoin, then I think that'll lend itself towards altcoins having some period, whether that's a couple of weeks or a month or what, to have a sustained run together. And until then, I think we'll just see like individual coins making runs for one reason or the other. But yeah, I think it's still a challenging market for altcoins, but I think there's probably some opportunity for trades on a BTC relative basis. When we're high like this, one of the problems that I run into is that the USD values on altcoins would have to go quite high to make up any of the losses that they've had on the Bitcoin pairs. And I'm not sure the market's ready for that, for like just a gigantic USD swing. But if I had to say, like, I think the move above 6,400 is the most bullish thing that could happen for alts if it becomes a floor for Bitcoin. Then I think it creates a trading, you know, scenario where altcoins can start to pick up and try to catch up to that 6,400 zone, because none of them have, or few alts have really made up ranges like Bitcoin just did.
Yeah, and what you don't want to see is, if you're bullish on Bitcoin, is us return to 6,400 with no response and just hammer that 6,400 level again and again and again. That's certainly more bearish than bullish. What you want to see is a nice giant wick, like a $500 wick above 64, to be certain that there's buyers at that level and it gets rejected and whatever. But if we spent like a year ranging in 64 and then we come back to it and again range for a year, that's not a good thing. From the bullish perspective.
Yeah, from a bullish perspective, we shouldn't be spending that much time in the 5Ks or 6K or like low 6Ks. And we really want to be ranging topside now. Like if we consolidate,
right,
we want to consolidate towards 8K, not towards 6K. We want to set the like the low end of the range at 6,400, but we want to set the high end of that consolidation pattern where we just reached. So establishing the upper boundary of 8,400 needs to be where we break out from and, you know, make a move towards 10, 12K and all that stuff. So that's the bull case. That's the case for the bull market is underway. We just haven't made the breakout to go retest all-time highs yet, that type of thing.
Yeah, and range-bound consolidation is fine, like we're saying, as long as it's not, it doesn't have a bearish bias, you know.
Yeah, we don't want like a descending triangle with a flat line on 6,400 and lower and lower highs like we had in 2018. If that happened and we broke 6,400 again from some kind of consolidation from there, I mean, then I don't have any idea what I would expect, but it could be ugly. It could be many years left on a ranging and lowering market. Who knows?
It's still possible to flag out with a 6,400 base and make a bull case out of that versus the previous year, which was a bear flag basically the entire year, you know, however you want to read that.
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's definitely going to take some time to figure itself out. I don't think there's going to be any massive moves, but definitely a tradable range. It's not going to be $50 ranges for 2 weeks anymore. You know, we're going to have substantial ranges, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the most fascinating things that I get out of this is that our time below 6,400, it certainly looks more like capitulation, having gone back above it on the first try. And it makes the bear market look shorter to me somehow. Like, I know it's been a long time since we had an all-time high, and it was about a year from the time where everyone said, okay, party's over, like the breakdown from 12K. The breakdown from 12K to the break up from whatever that was, like 4K, was about a year. So I guess a year-long bear market is about right, but it just makes it look shorter when we so quickly went above the breakdown range, like the capitulation breakdown range.
Yeah, I agree. I was just measuring the dates. So from 64 to 64, it's like 170 days.
Yeah.
And from 64 to the 4K breakout, it's 140 days. Yeah, I agree that the bear market started when we broke 64, not necessarily, you know, the entire ranging, whatever, but that's just me.
Yeah. So I guess it wouldn't surprise me if, like, I'm not expecting new highs in whatever, 2019. And I don't think I'm expecting new highs in 2020, although that's possible. But, like, in my mind, we could spend 6 months plus setting up a consolidation pattern in some way. Maybe there'll still be volatility in that, but, like, some form of pattern, something to like hint next. And I just don't think we're going to, you know, Bitcoin's going to double again over the course of like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, no, I think the euphoria insanity is abated for now, for sure. And it takes time for the real money to just to make a decision about where they're going to put the money. It takes time to get these OTC trades going. We're talking like 30 to 40 days in some cases. So that takes time to hit the market. And the market to catch up with that. So, but this move definitely got everyone's attention. And there's nobody in finance who isn't aware of what happened over the past couple of weeks. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I think if anything, in terms of there being like a some kind of fear, it was that there would the Chinese capital flight that you mentioned earlier. I think that was probably the best like global macro market explainer, because there was a few days of real fear of like, oh, this China-U.S. trade war stuff's really coming to a head. Things look pretty terrible. Maybe we do need to find good hedges. And it looked for a bit like Bitcoin was really an answer in terms of saying, we don't like the monetary situation worldwide. Let's throw a few dollars somewhere else. And for big institutions, maybe that's a pretty cheap way to do it. And they don't care if it's 6 or 8K because they do see the potential for what it could be if it was truly to become what it was designed to be, which is a hedge against global fiat currencies. And I was fascinated by that. I don't know if you have the same takeaway.
I mean, it's all bullish for crypto. The world crumbling is bullish for crypto.
I know, but like, does it surprise you a little bit that that was part of a response for a increasing price? Like I feel like 2017 was all just risk on, you know, happy markets type of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas this was more like uncertainty worldwide. Bitcoin is going up. Like that's like a really like it kind of flies in the face of what you would think of risk on, you know, like it's being treated more like a risk off asset.
Yeah. We can say that with like an N of two. So it's hard to really like pinpoint like the correlation, but it is interesting that world markets were rolling over as crypto is just like moonshotting during this trade war Chinese stuff for the US. I mean, it happens.
And I agree the N of two gives it a risk, yeah. But you know, by the time it's like N five, like we should start to have a better understanding. So it's early days of trying to get a picture, but it was a data point, I guess. And yeah. As a data point, I'm quite interested.
Yeah, and it happens slowly and then all at once, right? So like all this stuff, unless there's an on-ramp, which there's more on-ramps now, there's more education now. Yes, traditional finance people are concerned, and rightfully so to some degree, about custody, even though they don't necessarily understand that you can self-custody. Most of them just legally can't do that anyway. So there's a lot of like weird stuff around custody that's still an issue that needs to be solved. But once this stuff gets traded on like TD Ameritrade and Fidelity, the custody issue,
which are both on the way.
Yeah, which are both like within a month, probably. The whole custody issues kind of go away because as far as I understand it, that Fidelity and TD Ameritrade are going to custody all that stuff in a way that satisfies institutional requirements.
So on the whole, I mean, we have a whole lot of bullish stories for Bitcoin. We'll have to see how it correlates to global capital markets and all that stuff. But as a data point, it looks like Bitcoin could end up being a risk-off trade But I don't know. I mean, I don't buy it yet, but I like it as a data point. So we'll have to see what the next one does. We've now seen Bitcoin go up 100% plus, both in a very risk on market in 2017. And in that case, it went up like whatever, 10x, and now up 100% plus in a risk off environment. So maybe we'll start to lean with a bias on the next data point. That's something I want to watch for sure, is get a continued understanding of how Bitcoin relates to broader markets.
Yeah, it's definitely all over the place. In 2017, 2018, it correlated pretty highly from my non-math perspective, just eyeballing it anecdotally. And then recently it was inverse correlated, basically.
Yeah. And I think the thing we do know right now is that there is relevance. Bitcoin is becoming relevant in broader markets. So at a minimum, that's an important thing to stand for us.
Yeah, and it's in the conversation for a lot of people now. Versus before, it was just like a joke, whatever. But now it's like, you know, this is a thing, basically.
Yeah. Well, why don't we leave it there for your session from Magical CryptoCon. And I'm sure you got some writings coming out to dig into some of these issues more. And
yeah, Brave New Coin. I'm working on getting tick data for all this stuff to do some sort of write-up or tweet thing to talk about it. Twitter, follow us on Twitter. Yeah, you know where, you know me, right?
If you're
listening to this podcast, you probably know who we are.
Hey, there's always new listeners coming. That's in true. Just like the new money, man.
That's true.
All right, we'll catch everybody next time. Go to ledgersass.com for this episode and more, and we'll talk to you soon.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight, I can barely